always, is a production of Blarney Stone Broadcasting and was pre-recorded. Good morning, golfers. Welcome to Finding Fairways here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne is in studio with our co-host Dan Pohl, not at the Polecat. He is out visiting some courses this week, and the course we started with was the newly renovated Oakland Hills Country Club. And Dan, thanks for joining me out there. It was certainly an experience.
Well, you know, Jerry, I didn't know that you had such a close tie there, living, you know, growing up across the 18th tee box. And it was nice to hear you talk about the friendships and the people that you have. I mean, that's really where golf is. It's not just all of the business things that you can do and all the fun playing, but it's the characters and the things that go on, you know, around any golf course or that are just regular life. So it was nice doing that. I want to thank you very much for the leg spasms I had last night from walking the south course at Oakland Hills. I don't know that I walked it. I just kind of crawled around it. But, you know, I'm fairly beat up, as most people know, and walking a golf course at this stage of my life doesn't necessarily bring out all the fun aspect of the game for me. But I think when you walk a course like Oakland Hills, especially when you've played it in major championship conditions and you kind of remember the way the holes looked before, you get a great sense of what these traditional old golf courses were like and then where the new, you know, traditions are going. And, you know, I know that they would love to have a U.S. Open again at Oakland Hills, which was part of the reason for the renovation and or restoration, whichever one you want to call it, folks. You know, they went back to some of the original, you know, looks and drawings, and it just gives you not only the sense of, you know, what great things people did way back then to build a golf course like that, but really what, you know, Michigan itself offers. I'm sitting out on the driving range right now at Michigan Hills, which is outside of Benton Harbor, and I just drove around the golf course, and it's this cool little golf course that, you know, has a ton of local play, a ton of guys playing in leagues, and it's one of those golf courses that you tee it up and would somebody say, hey, come and play Michigan Hills Golf Club? Probably not, or Michigan Hills, but you get around it and you go, God, this is really cool. So, you know, the goal for me at this stage of my life and career, maybe it's something I need to look at, it's just kind of mosey around the state, see how many great golf courses there are that people really don't know a little, you know, much about, and maybe we can report on them. But, you know, right now we all know Oakland Hills is Oakland Hills. And, I don't care if you played it in 96 in the Open with Jonesy when he won or played it in the PGA when TC Chen double chipped, it still got all the firepower you'd want. And with new sub air green setting in there, it is going to make it firm and fast consistently.
Well, that's what our experience was. And, to be fair, Dan and I didn't think we'd be walking, but they had a lot of rain down at Oakland Hills the day on Tuesday. We played on Wednesday. And so our host told us that there was no carts, and Dan was slightly crestfallen, but he soldiered on. You know, the thing I liked best about it, Dan, and there's a lot of things to get into, and we will, is I know that it was uncomfortable, especially on the back nine. Hell, I was sore. I was thinking, like, how did I walk this course double bagging it a third of the time with those old big staff bags walking up and down those hills? I was certainly a different cat back then.
Well, you'd have to go back a long, long ways to see myself not only just walking but pushing a cart. I'm not sure that I ever, you know, I carried clubs, obviously, which, you know, is what it is. I wasn't going to carry my staff bag unless I had about two clubs in it and maybe one ball and a tee. that would have been about it. But, you know, it's just it's always interesting to see the ups and downs and the, you know, the movement of a golf course when you're walking it. So, you know, it was a test. We all know that. It was really cool to get out, and, you know, the friends that you had to join with us, you know, hopefully they put up with me okay, because there was quite a few times I said, what the heck am I doing out here? So they're probably thinking, well, hey, that pole's a really cool guy. But, you know, like I said, it's Oakland Hills. And when you say Oakland Hills, you think about, you know, Ben Hogan and bringing the monster to its knees. You think about a lot of different, you know, experiences in the game that have brought, a lot of great memories to the state of Michigan. And like I said, for you to have that connection with them and one of the nicest professionals in the game, I don't know that you'd ever find anybody in man of Steve Brady. I mean, Michigan is very, very lucky to have so many quality, not only players, but just great guys.
Yeah.
So George Bowman over at Oakhurst, and you got, guys, up in Charlevoix, you go across the board. I don't want to name too many of them, but just great individuals that understand what the game of golf is about. And, Steve's one of the best.
I guess I wasn't surprised at how well you played. I know, the putting was difficult. I don't think even the members that we played with have gotten a handle on the greens yet. We didn't see too many putts go in from outside of 5 or 6 feet. Those greens were firm, fiery, and fast. With that sub-air system on, but you hit the ball well past Scott and I with most of your drives and professionally kept the ball below the hole on all your approaches. I don't think you missed many greens.
Jerry, it's the game of golf. The hardest thing for me to do is to concentrate at the level that you need to when you're on those greens. I read it from behind and walked up and hit it.
Right.
I didn't take the time to really, look at the hole location, how it's going to break with certain speeds. And so, if you don't, you're going to pay the price. I mean, there's times where you got a 15-footer and you knock a 10 feet by and you go, what the heck were you thinking? And, what I say to myself, you weren't thinking about anything. You were brain dead. And, when I look at a golf course like this and I go out and play, I'm more challenged by the aspect of can I play a difficult course, keep it below the hole, because I know if I went out and, really worked on the speed, was able to putt those greens. I mean, listen, those things at certain spots were putting 13, folks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not like here's a good example. Now, I get lucky and make a par on the first hole. The second hole, I had a beautiful drive on the par five, hit it on the middle front of the green, and I got a putt that, if you get it within 6 feet, you've done pretty good.
Right.
I mean, it's just one of those putts where you're up the hill and you're afraid of it coming back at you. It's your second hole in. You're not really paying attention, to it. And all of a sudden you blast one, 15 feet by and you get three putt and you go, okay, there's a lost shot. And so you keep hitting decent shots and get nothing out of it. And then all of your, mediocre shots or bad shots are magnified. And they're magnified into, what you sometimes say, good bogeys,
yeah.
Easy bogeys, but they're still bogeys. And a place like Oakland Hill just doesn't offer you that many opportunities for birdies if you're hitting it, fairly long range. I mean, the eighth hole, folks, we all know has always been a difficult hole, but I hit a drive, hit it pretty good, flew it in the middle of the fairway, it didn't roll anywhere. And I got 3 wood to the green. I mean, listen, I'm not a chump when it's supposed to hit it, but I felt like it. So like I said before, I think the only thing that I text to Steve, and, we can talk about Oakland Hills, we can talk about the redo, all that as much as we want, but they did what they wanted to do. I just thought they could have blended some of the old school looks, the holes like number 12, that beautiful par five that used to be framed by the trees on the right, that made it a little more difficult. Holes like five that down the left side was much more penal, and so I kind of remember, probably where I hit it in bad spots back then, and I've probably become a better driver of the ball now. So I really felt like overall the driving of the golf ball was easier.
Right.
Huge bunkers, off the tee, but very well positioned, but also a lot of area to hit to. Now, if they make a U.S. Open and they narrow those in a little bit and they grow that rough quite a bit longer, you may see a totally different animal there. But I just thought that the golf course itself, take away the green sights, look at the big bunkering picture, but then the tree stuff. I mean, 14, I used to cringe at 14, try to fit it between the trees on the right and left. And, even though you might miss the fairway, you're not limited to move the ball forward by a big tree hanging over. So that's the only thing I passed along to Steve, is that I would have loved to have seen them put a little bit of that old school into some of those holes, and not just change everything.
Yeah, it would have been a nice mix to have a couple of more traditional holes. But you drove the ball in the fairway and not in the bunker except for the first hole. Now, I hit it in four fairway bunkers, and I missed a few fairways. Not many, actually. I drove the ball pretty well. But that rough, even though they hadn't grown it to a U.S. Open caliber, was still challenging. And, you know, that when I hit it in the rough on 16, I only had 140 to clear the pond, and I couldn't get enough club on it and dumped it in the water. So I don't think...
That's normally a 5-wood for you anyway, so... You know, that you just got to play to your strength. Should have laid out sideways. But I would ask you, Jerry, I mean, nobody probably has more knowledge, not only playing it, but caddying it, be around it, talking to people.
Yeah.
I mean, your impression. I mean, am I wrong in my idea that, you know, a beautiful scenario. I mean, the scenery and the visions off of the first tee box, the putting green, absolutely, you know, beautiful. But once you get on the golf course, it seemed to have kind of the same flavor throughout. Am I wrong in my aspect of that?
Because they eliminated so many trees, a lot of the holes seemed a little barren. But, you know, conversely, all the holes before all had, you know, the tree line had that firestone look. So I kind of tend to agree with you. It'd been nice to have eliminated the trees on 6 of the holes or 8 of the holes and left some of the trees there. You and I talked just briefly about what Weisskopf did at Forest Dunes, where you've got a traditional Augusta-style tree-lined golf course on the front side, and then you've got more of a Pine Valley, sparser, waste areas, greens, buoyed by waste areas. That might have made for a much more interesting look. But I'll tell you, and you know it as well as I do, the biggest offense for that course, no matter what, is going to be those greens.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. In the day, those were the severest, you know, greens that you could have. And I understand that, you know, some of the reasoning was when they were playing soft and the younger players could throw BBs in there or darts, you know, it didn't play to the up, you know, to the difficulty that they wanted. But, you know, to me, again, this is me. I love the challenge of every day having to play a different condition on the green. So
right.
One day, I mean, and the reason the rough was long or tough was they had quite a bit of rain the night before, so it's thick, it's wet. You're not going to get that club through there. I don't care who you are. Maybe Bryson could, but certainly not you and I. But I look at it and I say, okay, what from the day-to-day, you know, play and, you know, the speed of those greens varying and the ball releasing one day and checking up the next. That's the challenge. I mean, I was always challenged by Augusta Nationals, you know, early in my career, you know, to do that because Augusta didn't have the sub airs. And so you had, you know, one ball the first day when it was wet, you know, you might stick a 7-iron in there. Next day it firmed up a little bit and you couldn't play the same shot.
Right.
So to me, it warrants to me just looking at it and saying it as a player, is the bigger challenge to have fast and firm every day? Or is the bigger challenge to have to adapt on a day-to-day basis? And I think that's just, you know, that's a flip of a coin. It's a decision that the club made, and, you know, they did a heck of a job with it. But, you know, again, I just looked at it and said, okay, I remember old school Oakland Hills. I remember playing it. Always going to be tough. It's just I don't know if the speed of the greens and the firmness staying constant all the time is a good thing or bad.
When we return on Finding Fairways, we'll discuss some of those more particular aspects about some of the unique holes at Oakland Hills as we continue our discussion with Dan Pohl here on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends at carlsgolfland.com. Tim Coyle's on the phone with me. Tim, we know of all the problems and shortages and everything in the golf industry, but nobody has kept more stock and been able to service their customers better than Carl's Golfland.
Yeah, for sure. It has been a challenge this year in terms of product procurement, but we do our best to keep it in stock and keep our customers informed of what we have when we have it. It's been a great year for it. I will say that our website is a great reflection of our available in-stock product that we do have. A lot of people aren't aware of it, but our website actually features a live inventory. And what that means for our consumers is that it is a combination of all of our warehouse products. So if you're on our website and you see something there, it is in stock today and can ship. So we try to make that clear to our consumers, but if it wasn't, I'm here to tell you about it.
Well, if you're listening to this program, you should already be on the carlsgolfland.com have been on the website and gotten the email blast, because I get them at least 4 or 5 times a week, and it does reflect your stock. Whenever I order stuff, it's in stock, and it shows up on my doorstep within 48 hours up here in northern Michigan.
Yeah, that's always nice. We're fairly centrally located as well, you know, when you think about where we are in the United States. Hopefully you have subscribers to the podcast all over the place, and if they're listening, they can definitely get product fairly quickly, just us being more centrally located than some other retailers.
And it's right now, you do have a good stock of the best drivers on tour.
2021 might be the year of the driver when you think back as of late, and there's some great product out there from, you know, not just the names you know, but even the names you know are pumping some really great stuff out. You know, the TaylorMade Sim 2, Epic from Callaway, and the Ping G425, which we have abundant inventory in right now. So if you're looking for the G425 and from Ping and haven't been able to get your hands on it this year, now's a good time. Yeah, and there's something for everybody, too, in all of those product lines. You know, something a little bit more forgiving or more towards the better player. You know, adjustable weights for the slicers and hookers out there, and you know, from the other vendors as well. But we have a lot of them in stock today.
I've owned a number of Ping drivers. People always talk about Ping irons. Ping makes great drivers, and the place to get those right now is at carlsgolfland.com. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, man.
Finding Fairways here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. Jerry Coyne is in studio with our co-host Dan Pohl on the phone at Lake Michigan Hills Golf Course. And Dan, following up a little bit of our conversation about Oakland Hills, yeah, I think they could have kept some trees in some places and retained a little bit of that old school. I mean, really the only hole that they left trees on was number 15. I would have liked to have seen.
So they got some nice big ones, Jerry, but they don't really frame.
Right.
They're just kind of, you know, they're out there, and they let, you know, it'll be very interesting if he changes the fairway patterns to run up to those, or how they blend together. So there is an anticipation, I would think, of how, you know, how or if they're going to, you know, bring the fairways in or extend a few out. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, cause a couple of them like 15, or like 14 specifically.
Right.
You don't see the fairway. You can't see the fairway very well.
Nope.
And if you're coming at it at an angle, you really don't know how that ball is going to react. And I think that's what made it a really good driving hole was that. And you had the trees to the right, so you knew you had to favor that left center. But, you know, the one thing, and Jerry, you've played probably as many golf courses as I am. And this is what has always, I've always been in wonderment of older design. Because you've got so many great short par threes in the world, but yet Oakland Hills has probably got the most difficult and longest par three total. I mean, you laughed at me because I was carrying a 4-iron and a 5-wood, and so I was in between. So what did I do on number 9? I cut a little driver in there from, you know, 225 or 30 into the wind. But I'm surprised. I'm really surprised that somebody didn't look into the idea of either redoing, let's just say 13, as this beautiful little, you know, par 3, 135 yards over water, tucked down in there, so that you had a visual look at something that was totally different from the course, but that really stood out in somebody's mind as, you know, wow, this par 3. Because I do believe that these par 3s, as difficult as they are at Oakland Hills, don't really get the world's confirmation as great par 3s. Would you agree with me?
Well, you know, 9 is famous because we talked about it. Hogan laid up every day because the thing is so long, and they've added a new tee box there. They can play it at 245 into one of the world's toughest greens. And to me, 17 is the hardest par 3 I ever played on a consistent basis. I never made birdie on that hole. I played that golf course hundreds of times and never made birdie there. And I've even birdied number 9. And 13 is short still. I mean, we played it at, what, 145, 150? The hole that I would have changed is the first par 3, number 3. Now, they extended that creek, right, that was coming from 5 and then went through number 7. That's the hole they changed the most, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They could have run that creek across number 2, the par 5, and then had it run either behind or parallel to the green on number three. And that would have made that hole a hell of a lot more interesting. And they took the trees out from behind it and everything else. That's the hole that I think they could have turned into a more special par three.
Well, I agree 100%. I was just asking, you know, basically you had to look at two of the par threes, either the one on the front or one on the back, and decide which one. I was just thinking because 13 has the valley there in front with the low area, it would
right.
be a simplistic deal to put a lake in there and bring it up to the edge of the green. Because notoriously, these tour players have more trouble with shorter holes. Doesn't matter if it's a wedge or trying to drive it. They got a 310-yard hole and they play it over par for the week. And they got a 515-yard hole and they play it under par for the week. So what's the difference? What are you trying to do? Now again, you know, I'm not going to argue with anybody about that, but I was just, just surprised me that wasn't maybe, and maybe it was looked into, of having one of those great, great visual par threes that bust you out of the mentality, you know, bust your eyesight out. That has a lot of visual noise, that has different things. You know, you don't need a waterfall to do that, but you just need
right.
corners and where you can sit those pins in there and say, okay, boys, here's a pitching wedge shot. See if you can put it in there.
Right.
And you know, that's the only thing I wonder about when you redo, you know, existing golf courses is that, you know, we got some good par threes at Polka, but without doubt, 17 stands out in everybody's mind. And from, you know,
yes.
it runs from
great
you know, 135 to
yep.
100 and, you know, you just got to hit a shot.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, I enjoyed the heck out of just walking around and seeing it, even though I was panting for breath and thought you might have to do CPR on me. You know, it's the first cart that I've walked around with that had a defibrillator with it. But that was just me. So it was fun. I hope, what a luxury it would be for any of your, you know, people to have a chance to play someplace like that. But it was fun.
Well, you know, going back to what you talked about, because we have like 2 minutes left in this segment, 2.5 minutes left.
Okay.
So that driver that you hit on number nine, so we were playing in a pretty severe wind that was coming out of the west. So we were heading directly into the wind at number nine, and it was playing 200 yards long, and we figured at least a 20-mile-an-hour wind. I didn't want to hit driver, and I did. I had to. You finagled that little driver, you know, like, for lack of a better term, a Lee Trevino cut driver in there, and it was the only one that hit the green.
Yeah, you know, if you know what the ball is going to do, and with a driver, especially for me, it's a very comfortable shot that I know the hard part is carrying at the distance, because the fronts in front of the greens yesterday, they were still pretty soft from the rains, and then the firmness on the green, so you could be, you know, 2 or 3 yards off and have a totally different reaction into the hole. So, you know, but I thought with a back right pin placement and the way that thing set up, why take something and try to throw it into a very small area in the back? And this is course management 101. You know,
right.
why are you trying to carry it all the way back there and land it on a 3-yard area back there? Not many people can do it. I was just trying to use the slope, get it in where I could. You know, I mean, you know, legitimately it wasn't a birdie putt, but I shouldn't three, you know, I mean, I should make par most of the time. And so that's what Hogan was doing. He was playing percentages. He was putting it down there so he didn't bring, you know, a double bogey into play. And, you know, again, that's what you have to do. 17 is a little more different because it's forced carry up onto the front of the green because
right.
they shade that front of that green down where anything short is going back 50, 60 yards. So you can hit a decent shot there and come up 3 yards short and, you know, have one of those, hopefully it doesn't roll into a divot because everybody's down there. But we get right back to the old saying, you know, you sometimes don't mess with, you know, what's really, really good. And, okay, there's probably 2 or 3 holes that really changed my look of it. And, like I said, I agree with you on number three. I think that would have been a great, you know, opportunity to blend a little, you know, long gated green in there with a creek in front and, you know, put some deep bunkering in the back and really
yeah.
make that a small green so these guys are hitting, you know, something into it, you know, 6-iron, 7-iron, something like that. It still can be 185 yards. But I just think just bigger greens, more slope, isn't necessarily the answer all the time.
Yep. Well, Oakland Hills famously hosted a Ryder Cup. It was the site of the worst defeat ever by an American team on American soil, and a new Ryder Cup team has been chosen. And Dan Pohl and I will discuss that American team when we return here on Finding Fairways and Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Back to Finding Fairways on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne is in studio on the phone with Dan Pohl, who was on the Ryder Cup team of 1987, which was the first team that lost on American soil. I hate bringing that up, Dan, but as we were tying it in with Oakland Hills, you know, the famous, I mean, that was a massacre. Your buddy Hal Sutton was the captain. He tried twice to pair Tiger and Phil together, and those were bomb outs, and just a surprise. I mean, really, the Americans run off the golf course at Oakland Hills. I'm certain we're not going to see that at Whistling Straits, but on paper, this is going to be a pretty even matchup between Europeans and Americans.
Yeah, you know, with the availability of making six picks, you can kind of look at who's playing good, not only, you know, recently, but, you know, that might be outside that top 12 position that you feel is a big good fit for your game. Now, you know, when you look at a Stricker, a Love, a Couples, and, you know, the guys that they have on board, it's a pretty knowledgeable golfer right there. So, you know, what I look at is who on the rookie side? They pick six rookies? Is that what I understand?
Shoffley, Scheffler, Harris English, Danny Berger, Cantlay, and Morikawa. None of those guys have ever played on a Ryder Cup.
Do you think, folks, that these guys will be intimidated, scared, anything else after Cantlay put on the exhibition that he did it for a $15 million payday? Do you think Morikawa, who is, you know, really taken the world by storm as a major championship contender, Berger's won, all these guys, they're not rookies in the mentality of their games. They're just rookies in that they haven't played long enough to be on a Ryder Cup team.
Right.
You know, again, I don't know that there is a rookie mentality anymore, because the WGC World Championships changed a lot of things, because they got more experience playing for not only a ton of money, but the rivalries and the things that they were having, and the amount of quality golf courses, and you had to play. I mean, you really had to play well to even get into some of these. So I look at it and I say, okay, you know, yeah, you can call most of those guys rookies, but is anybody going to tell Cantlay that he's, you know, a rookie? No, he's right there and, you know, at the top of his game, and should be. All he has to do is go out and kind of put that same mentality he was towards the end of the season, and, you know, he still could get beat. We all know that, but I think he's, that head and shoulders above a lot of these players now, if he doesn't have a lull.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, there's no question, Jerry, that playing for your country is a totally different animal. But when these guys get on the golf course and they're playing a course like Whistling Straits, you're not any different than a lot of the courses that you played. East Lake and all these ones leading up are not that unsimilar to what he's doing now or what they're playing now. They're still about doing what? Hitting golf shots.
Right.
And if they go out and they play the way they have, they should do just fine. Does that mean that the Europeans are going to roll over? Heck no. I think it was a great opportunity for those guys, Stricker, Love, Couples, to kind of set a, by taking Patrick Reed out, who is probably in most people's consideration one of the best match play players that we've had around in quite a while, they showed that maybe, just maybe, character, maybe the way you're looked at, maybe the way you are seen by a lot of people are more important than what winning a point for the Ryder Cup means. And so it'll be very interesting to see. I know that there's going to be talk all across the board, on that issue. But you know, at the stage of where he is at, the other guys were really, really deserving. And so I don't think that not picking him was a negative.
I don't have an issue with any of the picks here at all. I mean, going back to what you were saying, there's really only three of these six so-called rookies I mean, Morikawa's pretty damn near a rookie. He's only been on tour just over a year. I mean, obviously a great year. I mean, he won the PGA. What was it? It was only his seventh event he'd played on tour. So, and Berger hasn't played. He's only been on tour for a year or so. And Scottie Scheffler is just out of college just over a year. So those guys really don't have a ton of experience in playing professional tournament golf, period. But going back to go ahead.
But I will say this, Jerry, is that most of them were on Walker Cup teams.
Right.
They were on different levels of play that won't intimidate them in this position. I mean, Schauffele going over, you think he's not going to be, stuck in the moment. He's not going to bury his head and crawl away. So, you know, I mean, there's certain guys that you have to look at and say, okay, yeah, they're rookie and, you know, in name or whatever, but from the playing standpoint, with all the college, you know, experience type stuff, 1 year on the tour playing at a high level can give you a lot of confidence for sure. And I think all these guys come in, or most of them come in with a lot of confidence.
No, that part is absolutely true. It's been an extremely competitive year in golf. I mean, almost, I think I saw a stat where 70% of the tournaments this year had playoffs in them. So you know how tough it is to win out there, Dan. It's gotten only tougher, and you don't make it up in this higher echelon by, as you said, sticking your hand in the sand or freaking out when the pressure's heavy. But I guess the one last wild card that we'll find out a little bit about is, can Brooks Koepka play? That hand injury looked pretty bad to me, and they asked Stricker about that. He said, I'm not talking about that until we get a doctor's report, or Brooks says he can't play. So this is our team for now. You know, they might have to choose one more guy.
Yeah, or, you know, I mean, you got strong enough teams to get you through the singles. It'd just be the question is, does two more days or whatever get you to a point? Because when you earn your way on like that and you're one of the top players, you hate to not be able to play.
Right.
Now, again, Whistling Straits is no there's no simple task getting around there. You know, if you're playing good, so it'll be very interesting to see. You know, the firmness of the ground, all that things can be a big issue, but we've seen it before. We've seen him, you know, get better fairly quickly and move on. So, you know, my biggest, you know, it's not an issue, but it's just these European players that have had success, not only over here, but on the other, the Hattons of the world and some of these other ones. I just think, like you said before, this is evenly matched.
Right.
And if somebody gets off and starts, making some birdies, it's not unusual to see these guys, run off, you know, four or five in a row. So, it's one of those things where, yes, you look at the United States team and you still say, wow, you know, they got some good players. But we've been saying that since 1987. I mean, you know, if you looked at our team of Crenshaw, Kite, Nelson, Dean, Kalk, Stewart, Nicholas is the captain. I was probably the weak link. Sutton, Mize, Simpson. You could go down the line. It just depends on the enthusiasm and the play that the Europeans bring. And if they bring their games and the U.S. doesn't match it, you know, you could have that tie or upset or whatever. So, you know, again, I look forward to just seeing some of the matchups, seeing these guys play this golf course under a little bit different conditions.
I got asked a question, and I didn't really get a chance to ask you, so I'll ask you now. Who do you pair with Bryson DeChambeau?
Very good question. It kind of depends if he's going in both sessions. I think in some cases, if you can take him in the best ball and let him go,
right,
you got to have somebody that's a par maker. You got to have somebody that doesn't lose a hole to bogey, or you just try to go out and blitz somebody, you know. Do you put Morikawa in there that doesn't make a lot of mistakes that, you know, is going to play not so much safer? I don't think you want to get a player in there that's playing a little safer, but I think you can't give away holes in case Bryson gets a little wild. There's another train of thought. You put Dustin Johnson with him and say, okay, guys, go shoot 12 under and beat the heck out of these people. that's another way to look at it. That's just what those guys have to decide, and they'll see how everybody's playing. They'll see how they gel, and then they'll make the right decisions. Now, again, we can go back to Oakland Hills and say, Hal Sutton, he tried. Everybody was asking for the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, pairing. and it backfired on him.
Yep.
And as a result, Hal took a lot of flack for that. I don't really have a set guy. I want to let Bryson loose. Then you have to have somebody that's hitting fairways, hitting greens, and not giving away holes. Who's the best driver on that team right now as far as just in play?
Yeah. When we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll discuss a little bit more possible pairings, because I know there's a few guys on this list that Dan Pohl really likes. And we'll talk a little bit about the way the European team is shaping up as well on Finding Fairways on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfPlan.com. Welcome back to Finding Fairways on Outdoor Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfPlan.com. Jerry Coyne is in studio on the phone with our co-host Dan Pohl, Ryder Cupper Dan Pohl, and we wanted to get him on before the Ryder Cup. We mentioned a little bit about the American team, and I asked you off the air, could you play Bryson DeChambeau in alternate shot? I guess the ultimate would be if he and Koepka, you could send them out together.
you could confuse the other team so much that they would maybe forfeit. Who knows? But if he's comfortable, I think you have to be looking at a golf course where, you know, if even numbers, you know, the alternate shot's a weird deal, because throughout the course of the round, you know, maybe the even numbers set up pretty well for him. And he can take advantage of his length. He can take advantage of some of the, you know, shortcuts and things like that, and really make another player, you know, stronger. I use the example of really looking at the golf course as your main mentality, is that, you know, when I played in the Ryder Cup in 87, Hal Sutton and I played together. And Hal was considered probably the best, you know, iron player at the time, and I was, you know, up there too. But at Muirfield Village, all the par threes are even-numbered holes. So you had number four, you had number 8, you had 12, and you had 16.
Right.
Who do you want playing those holes? Well, Hal was the even, I was the odd.
Right.
So, you know, if there's a chance that you can look at a golf course and say, okay, I'm not afraid of these even number holes in the alternate shot, you know, he's still a talent. I mean, I don't know that you can just wipe him to the side and say, oh, he can't play in the alternate shot. I think you have to critique the golf course and say, okay, can you play it smart on these even holes, so once again, you don't give away, holes. Best ball, you know, again, it's just whether or not you want to go, you know, guys on the go, because the worst thing that can happen is you throttle them. If the first guy is a long hitter and Daniel Berger's playing with him and Daniel hits it out of play, now what does Bryson do? You know, does he still rev it up and go? Or do you just get somebody that's going to put the ball in play so that guy can play? There's a lot of differings of opinion there.
Yeah.
So, again, I just think I look at the American pairings as actually a little more interesting, a little more psychologically driven than the Europeans, because the Europeans are always about what?
Team.
Camaraderie.
Yep.
So
the team.
It's always about playing with somebody that you enjoy playing with, and if you play good, you beat people.
Well, that brings us to the European team. Now, they have this one last tournament they're playing right now. They're playing at Wentworth for the BMW Championship, and these points count. But the way I look at it, the team that's going to be assembled that the captain can't do anything about is going to be Casey and Tommy Fleetwood, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton, Lee Westwood, Matthew Fitzgerald, and probably Victor Perez. Those are probably going to be the nine guys that make it in on points, unless somebody does something spectacular and gobbles up, you know, wins the tournament, who was, you know, five or six spots back, like the Wiesberger German guy. So that leaves some interesting picks, which is what I wanted to get to you, Dan, is so you've got three guys that you can pick, and you've got four guys that you would really like to probably see on the team if you're Patty Harrington, and that's Garcia, Justin Rose, Ian Poulter, and or Shane Lowry.
Yeah, take the first three. I mean, listen, experience goes a long way. Camaraderie with the Spaniard. I don't know that much about Perez. I know he's a heck of a player, so just to be in that top nine has to be, you know, having a great year. But I think there's still something to be said, especially on a golf course like Whistling Straits, that maturity and that ability to control your psychological stuff. I mean, you're going to have a lot going on all week. And I don't know that Shane Lowry, even though he was the Open champion and that, I think I just go stronger with those first three. And, you know, I think, number one, I think Sergio is a lock. I don't know how you don't go with him.
Right.
I don't know about, you know, Poulter. You bring him in as a, you know, a weapon only because he just is a match play wizard. Then you know, when you look at, you know, the number three pick there in Justin Rose, you still got a guy that can light it up. He's had off weeks, but he doesn't, you know, he's still got the ability to get the ball around. Probably 2 or 3 years ago, he's the best iron player out there. And he's kind of lost it. I think that's more from changing equipment, doing a bunch of new stuff. And
right.
Maybe just going back and reinventing, you know, not reinventing stuff, but just going and playing, is what he needs. But, you know, you'd be hard pressed to, you know, if you pick three or four, or like say, if somebody comes out and wins an automatic berth and you have to throw one away outside of that, who do you toss? You know, that's a tough one. To me, I still think Poulter is the last guy in, because I don't know that in the new world of play that he's the you know, the guy that's going to be paired with a lot of these other guys. But you know, he may have Westwood come out and say, hey, I want to play with Ian, or you know, so you know, flip a coin. I mean, when you got four quality players that they shipped them all, yeah, in majors, haven't they?
Justin Rose Justin Rose would do Patty Harrington a huge favor by winning the BMW Championship. And then that drops Perez out, and then you got the three guys that you're talking about. You know, we talked about this with Kevin Frisch and I last week on the show, just a touch. Yeah, Poulter is, you know, obviously a Ryder Cup killer, but he hasn't really played very well on tour in a couple of years. So, you know, like you said,
here's the other thing, Jerry. Does Whistling Straits fit his game? Because that is, you know, where you've got to, you know, just having guts and stuff doesn't mean you got to hit shots. And, you know, Poulter, you know, is a good ball striker, but he's not what I would put in the same, you know, position as these other guys.
Right.
You know, if Perez went, you know, you may even go with Lowry. You know, I mean, if Justin did, because he's consistent, he's a good driver of the golf ball, he's been there. So yeah, it's a tough one. That's all circumstantial to what's going on, but you got to look at that team and say, okay, some new blood in it. You know, what's Harrington going to, you know, Casey, I think, is a strong candidate to be one of those guys again that steps up. You know, you look at some of the other guys that not too long ago were, you know, the key to some of the European wins was, you know, Eduardo Romero, or not Eduardo Molinari. And a lot of those guys that no longer are even looked at as a potential European
right.
player, you know, I mean, as far as a Ryder Cup. So, you know, I mean, times change, but I would look at the golf course and say, okay, does this fit Poulter's, you know, now again, he's a great match player, and he's a pretty good driver of the ball. So if you put him in the alternate shot, then, you know, he's going to drive the ball a heck of a lot better than who? Is he a better driver than Sergio? Probably not. Is he a better driver than Rose? Probably not.
No.
Is he a better driver than
Lowry? No
Lowry?
Way.
Probably not.
No.
So again, you can sit and analyze, critique, and all. You know, as soon as they get their 12, they'll make up the teams and they'll go, all right, let's hit it, boys.
Well, and that's what we're looking forward to the most, is this matchup happening in just 2 weeks' time on one of the great golf courses that I've ever played. Whistling Straits is going to be a magnificent setting for match play golf. I hope we get some decent wind out there. Dan, once again, thanks for joining us at Oakland Hills, and go ahead and send me the bill for that massage.
You know, the interesting thing is, listen, folks, the key to winning the Ryder Cup is going to be what? Finding fairways.
We'll take that segue, and we'll hope that America team finds the fairways every time they peg it and pound it down the middle. We'll be with you next week here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends at Boyne Golf. Ken Griffin's on the phone. And, Ken, we had a little dicey weather earlier in the week. It looks like a beautiful weekend.
Well, no, it is a great weekend. You know, thank goodness we got all that out of the way. The courses are in magnificent shape. A little bit of rain that we got earlier helped, and no real damage on the courses. It's just, it's been a really good last couple of days.
Yeah, you were talking to me off air about the really eerie weather that came across Bay Harbor and looked a little spooky at Crooked Tree.
Yeah, well, Matt Adams from the Golf Channel and his Fairways of Life show was hosting a fan trip here this week. And, you know, Wednesday was kind of an interesting day at Crooked Tree because you had all that weather moving through. And they were commenting that, wow, this is kind of like going to Ireland or Scotland, only we didn't have to take the flight across. It's exactly true. But then this morning we wake up and we're doing the show from out on the patio at the end of Bay Harbor, and the lake was like a sheet of glass. So it's Northern Michigan. We know it, you know, we love it, and we get that difference in the weather, and we embrace it.
Yep.
We're through the holiday. Fall golf is certainly here and in full swing.
Yeah, we have gorgeous weather this weekend, and now, between now and the end of the season, you'll have days where it's 70, and then you'll have days, like you've said before, you got to put on the turtleneck and the long pants.
Oh, yeah, have a vest handy, have a long sleeve shirt handy, but, you know, there's some great golf to be had in the fall. If you haven't made your reservations yet, you know, I'd certainly recommend you do it because the tee sheets are filling up. We've got a fall golf tee time special. You know, it's take 10% off Sunday through Thursday on the Alpine, Monument, Moore, and Crooked Tree courses. When you go online to book that, it's fall golf 21 tee time is the code. But we also have a fall golf stay and play special for Boyne Highlands the month of September. Just visit BoyneGolf.com and use the code, whenever you call in, use the code September, or SEPTGOLF21. Whenever you call the 800 number and talk to an experienced agent.
Yeah, staying at the Highlands in the great lodging and playing golf and being pampered in the restaurants and by the great staff, what a great way to spend a weekend or a whole week in fall in Northern Michigan. Ken, we'll see you out on the fairways.
Take care, Jerry. Thanks.